It's Wednesday, July 18th, 2012, and you're listening to episode 271 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 52 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name is John.
My name is Julia.
My name is Pat.
This is Wayne.
Holy crap, we got a lot of people.
Yeah, for anyone who can't count, we got six people. It's been a while since we've done an episode of this size, but
that just don't have the old man here, so it's easy to edit at least.
Yeah, it's still going to be easy to edit, so.
Forget easy to edit. We're too drunk for this to be easy to edit, Dan.
You're too drunk.
Actually, half of us aren't really drunk at this point.
John, you're
while we were recording episode...
I feel pretty.
270.
Last.
While we were recording episode 270, Chad was running an improv game.
A lone wolf.
A lone wolf improv game for
an actual play.
Right. Which we're not...
Spelljammer.
We haven't decided what we're going to do with that yet.
Organized play Spelljammer.
I have to say, I'm jealous of this.
Furry.
Because every time before Fear the Con, we talk about just spontaneous gaming and things like that. People talk about buying a game book at a convention and running it that night.
That's never happened.
I've seen it happen.
No.
I couldn't do it. I really couldn't do it. I'm really jealous of... I'm jealous of the ability to just sit down and just start gaming.
Fear me. I'm an RPG god.
All right. He says this while staring at me very scarily.
No, I'm actually staring at the Archon press pass. You are of little importance to me compared to the majesty of the Archon
the
press,
press pass.
The first press pass we ever got. 5-year-old press pass.
The first press pass we ever got.
Oh, I'm a pretty gaming girl. Archon press pass right there.
We have heard on this podcast before.
Look at that.
No, not just press pass. Press
panelist.
Panelist. Yes.
I had two ribbons, double authority.
Yes. That's right. We have heard on this podcast before that if there is an attractive woman around, Chad will not be looking at her.
That's the truth.
No, negative. I look at John.
We even have proof that from earlier.
But my eye
too,
is turned by Pat.
You are lone wolfing with Pat. What are you shrieking about, Wayne?
So anyway, we were talking about like spontaneous gaming and off-the-cuff gaming. Pat and I were sitting there because everybody else had like, let's record something. So Pat and I were just sitting there, and I'm like, Pat, do you want to role play? He's like, yes, I do.
You asked me at first. You said, have you ever done a lone wolf before? And I said, yes, but I didn't call it a lone wolf. For me, it was just doing a solo adventure. That was my terminology.
I'm a schoolgirl. I've been bad.
Well, just for people that
not in this, it wasn't.
Just for people that may not be familiar with the term lone wolfing.
It's one player, one game.
Yeah, exactly. So you just sort of a one-on-one game.
So Pat, let me ask you this. What'd you think of the game?
I loved it so far. Unfortunately, it got cut off
right when it got good, didn't
it? Yeah, we just got to the serious part.
Isn't that life?
Here's what I want to talk about, though. Not your specific improv game that occurred right there, but I want to talk about improv gaming in general. As with most things we do on the show, let me start by defining our terms.
Let's define Weidmer Brothers Alchemy Project Raspberry Russian Imperial Stout 012.
Yeah. Let's not. Dan, define your terms.
Right. So with an improv game...
Which is what I'm drinking.
What I'm talking about is...
Needs to be warmer.
When a game master and one or more players sit down, decide to run a game, and there is absolutely nothing prepared.
So every game I've ever run, ever.
This is not going to a game session without any notes prepared and just winging it for one session. That's just fooling your players.
Well, it could be that. It could be that. But what I mean is that you don't have much of a plot idea in mind. You maybe have one tiny concept, and that's about it. You don't have pages of notes. You've not been sitting there for the past 3 or 4 hours thinking things up and memorizing them.
3 or 4 minutes.
You're not running a module.
A Chad game.
All you have is a starting point, and you're going to let it go from there.
Well, in what we did tonight, we didn't even have that because we didn't even have that starting point because we literally sat down and Chad goes, what do you want to play, Pat? What genre? I said, well, let me think. What have I played lately?
He could have said urban fantasy. He could have said sci-fi. He could have said ancient Roman fantasy Cthulhu cults.
Right. And so I said, what have I played lately? And what haven't I played? So I settled on, I haven't played a Western in a long time.
Right.
Western, you know, like Deadlands type of a thing. So I said, hey, let's do that. And that's where we started. So for that, you know, in this case, it was just boom, completely.
So now, I have done some improv gaming.
Like played or ran?
Both.
Okay.
Not much of either. I've not played or run much of either. But I've done some improv gaming, and it's had mixed results. And what I want to do is I want to talk to the two of you on the mics specifically that run a lot of improv games.
So not me.
Which is Chad and John.
Hello.
And I basically want to talk through how do you improv game. Now, why you would improv game, there's many, many reasons.
Sure.
One could be a group of friends, like tonight, is just hanging out and somebody says, hey, let's game, but nobody's got anything prepared. Another possibility is you're on your way to your weekly game and you just procrastinated or life kicked you in the balls or whatever. And you just don't have anything written. And so you,
if you're procrastinate, if the reason you're running an improv game is because you're lazy and procrastinating, you're doing it wrong. An improv GM Well, I'm sorry. An improv GM is not a lazy GM because you put a lot of heart into it. You put a lot of effort into it. It's just that you don't put a lot of planning and notes into it. That doesn't mean that you just you don't care.
Well, here's another option for you,
this
Chad.
This is putting a ribbon on a turd because when you're a notes-heavy GM, you put a lot of work into it before and a lot of heart into it during. So I think procrastination is a perfectly reasonable reason to why you're...
I'd say here's another completely different reason. You put a lot of preparation into your game, you have your notes ready, you sit down, and your players do something so off the wall you never imagine.
Chicago.
Yeah, and you roll with it.
No, that's a game ender, John.
It's an ender's game.
Beyond
the third invasion.
All right.
I love that book.
Because I've seen this in a con game. You take all the time and you do all the prep work and you get ready to go. You throw the game out. And what they do is so far off the wall, you never anticipated it. Me as a GM, I will roll with it. And the rest of that game will be purely improv.
All right. So here's what I want to go with. Let's work through a whole series of questions and whatnot about how you guys improv GM. Because
poorly.
Because I personally have questions about how to do this. This is a skill I would like to learn.
You're pretty.
You're welcome.
Let's start off with this. You have nothing. You're sitting at the table.
They know nothing.
They say, let's go. How do you start? Where do you come up with your starting point?
Let's hold on. Let's backtrack a little bit here.
Okay.
They say, you know nothing, and then you go. No, no, no. That's not it. It's about the players. It's about trust. And I'm a little drunk here, so I might not be completely coherent. What I'm trying to say is you find out exactly what the players want. Do the players want a certain genre? Do they want a certain kind of game? Do they want a action-packed game?
So you're talking about showing up not only without a campaign, but without even the vaguest idea of what you're going to
play. Right. No system, no nothing. For me, personally, it's about asking the players questions. And I don't mean like, oh, we're playing Dread, so here's a questionnaire. I mean, that might be part of it. But like with what I just ran for Pat, I am a service. I'm presenting a level of entertainment to the player. And I ask them questions. What do you want to play? Do you want to play this kind of genre? Do you want to play that kind of genre? Because I really don't know what I want. Yeah, I want some things out of the game, but that's really unimportant. It's better to come to the game with a blank slate, at least for me. Totally blank slate, nothing. And then you ask the players, do you want a high adventure game, story game? Do you want this kind of genre? Do you want sci-fi? Do you want fantasy? Do you want modern age?
Well, what type of character do you want to play?
Yeah, what kind of character? Well, that is a valid question.
Right, okay.
So for me, personally, it's important to get the framework of the game first.
Okay.
You know, like, we'll go extremes. Fantasy or sci-fi. I need that in my mind first. Like this game that Pat and I just played, which is really awesome. Pat said he wanted to do a Western. Okay, Western. Boom. I narrow my scope. Suddenly a whole bunch of stuff gets thrown out.
That immediately leads to the next question for me. Western, not as much, but let's say they said sci-fi. That leads to the very next question to me. What kind of sci-fi do you have?
Well, exactly. And so I asked Pat that, too. I'm like, because he had mentioned something about Deadlands and sci-fi. I'm like, Pat, what kind of Western do you want? Are we talking like a John Wayne, guns blazing Western? Or are we talking more something with like a spiritual angle? Or are we talking something like Deadlands where there's a lot of magic around?
Weird West.
Weird West. And Pat threw at me sort of a... You didn't so much throw at me, well, I kind of want the spiritual angle. You're like, yeah, I kind of would like some weirdness in there. I forget exactly what you said.
I said, let's not go, you know, straight on Deadlands, but right. more, I don't want to do just a straight spaghetti Western kind of a thing.
Right. And so I focus the lens in further. We want a little bit of spirituality in there, but we don't want to be this big, gigantic deal. We don't want to be world defining. We want it to be something subtle. Okay. So tell me about your character. So at that point, like I have this framework of a world kind of rolling in my mind, but a lot of it's going to be based around the character or characters. So I'm like, okay, if multiple people were around me, I'd start asking them questions. If it's one person, I ask them like one or two questions. Like I ask Pat, you know, it's like, are you a rich man or are you a poor man? You know,
let me ask you a question here though.
Yeah.
When you ask these people what it is they want out of the game,
mm-hmm.
what's going on here? Are you simply trying to get a sense of the sort of game that you will run? Or are you, in addition to that, quietly mining them for game hooks?
No.
Plot ideas?
What I need at that point, when I ask, like, if I ask you, it's like, Dan, we're playing a game.
Right.
What do you want to play? What do you want to play, Dan? I'm asking you this.
Okay,
right.
I'll say one of my favorites. Science fiction, hard science, but space opera.
Perfect. What I've just created in my mind.
Okay.
Is a framework. Uh-huh. A very, very basic framework. You know, I got some ships. I got a large galaxy. I've got the ability to travel between galaxies. I need to ask you that so I can create an internal consistency. Because if I'm just starting making shit up on the fly, if I'm just like saying, oh, well, you do this, and you do this, and you do this, and there's no reason for it, and I just kind of like this, that's bullshit. It's complete bullshit. Because it doesn't work. There's no internal consistency to it. So I need to ask you these questions like, okay, so you want sci-fi. You want sort of a space opera thing. You want ships. Okay, boom, ba-boom, ba-boom. I know how to turn that into like an internal consistency. There are things that you can do. There's things you can't do. There's no magic.
Okay.
There's no
so you're
things
setting
like that.
Boundaries.
Yeah, I'm saying boundaries for myself. Once I have all the boundaries I need to create an internal consistency as a storyteller, I don't care if you're a game master, a writer, a TV producer, or what. If you don't have an internal consistency in what you are trying to create, it's bull. It just doesn't make any sense at
See,
all.
All of this so far makes sense. A lot of this is how I approach a campaign. I don't approach a campaign with the campaign in mind. I approach it saying, hey, I'd kind of like to run a dressing game. I'd kind of like to run a superhero game. And from there, it isn't until I have the characters and their backstory that I start looking at those characters, looking at that feel, and I generate what I want the long-term campaign idea to be about. In the case of Dresden Files, I don't even want to pick what level of game we're running, whether it be up to your waist, neck deep, any of that, until I know what people want to play. If someone wants to play something that requires a certain level, putting it in D&D terms for you, Dan, like if someone wants to play something that they require a level 5 character for,
okay,
I wouldn't approach the campaign saying, I'm going to run Pathfinder or D&D starting at level 1. I would approach it, what are the characters you guys want to run, and then decide from there, am I going to start at level 1, level 3, level 5? The part that I would struggle with is the next step, Chad.
That same here, because
I would take all that information home. I would plan for the next week for the
exactly.
starting game.
I am the exact same way.
I would have a problem taking all that
asking
information
questions is
and
easy.
Jumping right then.
Asking questions is easy, but I'm with Wayne and Julia. So what do you do then to leverage that information into, okay, character concepts. There, first scene.
No. See, that's just it. You create this framework,
okay.
right? You All have right. the internal consistency.
All right.
Your spaceships, you're not slinging magic. There's no dragons flying through space.
All
sure.
Right.
Okay.
But
okay.
I want to play Shadowrun and I want to
Yeah, yeah. Well, you need to flush your head down a toilet. So
yes.
we...
I like Shadowrun.
I do too.
Get out.
God.
I'm going to run Shadowrun someday.
I will play it.
I'm going to Shadowrun away from that
I'm
going to
run it for you.
I play
it. Yeah, I'm going to run
I'll
for you.
I'll play. I've never played Shadowrun.
Okay,
I'll
exactly.
run for three
I've
of
never
you.
Played it. I will try any
I
system.
Like
I've never
I'll
played
go Lone Wolf Chad's
once.
Western game, and I'll like
Boom.
Boom.
You guys
right.
are just going to Lone Wolf
so,
later
go
tonight.
On.
Yeah, we are.
So anyway, you know, you guys are like...
There was a wolf in our game.
Yeah, there was a wolf in our game. The thing is you guys are like, okay, so I have this framework. Now, how do I dress the framework? How do I put in the stuff, the characters, the this and that. It's like, no. You have the framework. Let's put that aside for a second. Now look at the player and say, what is your character? Ask them a couple of questions. this doesn't mean that these are stock questions you have to ask every time. This just seemed appropriate to me.
Okay.
I asked him, okay, so we're going to play a semi-spiritual Western, so that means he's on a wild, wild frontier. Mm-hmm. So he's way out there. He's not like back east where everybody knows how everything works. We're on the frontier. We don't know how anything works. Okay, Pat, is your man a rich man or a poor man? And then he stopped. He's like, you know, I've been playing rich guys for a lot. It's like, I'm a poor man. It's like, okay.
And because you even said, because he's, are you rich, poor, or somewhere in the middle?
Right.
And I said, well, you know what? Not even going middle ground. I said, to hell with it. I'll do an extreme because I want to try something different.
Yeah.
The solo adventure was not new to me, but
right.
An improv solo adventure is a new thing. And also, as you mentioned on here, this was an actual play. We were recording this, which was absolutely something new for me because it's something that I don't do.
Right.
I've said it on the mics, so, but I'm like, you asked, said, hey, you mind if I record? I'm like, yeah, what the heck? Go ahead.
You got him drunk enough to agree.
Actually, I was pretty sober. Time. I was like, yeah, that's fine. I'm pretty drunk.
But
he used something else.
Yeah,
that's true. That's right. Lube. Yeah. Lube works wonders.
So, yeah, and I asked you a second question. I don't even remember
actually,
what
the first question you asked me was, are you a good man, a bad man, or somewhere in the middle?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the one I actually did go somewhere in the middle because I don't need to be a shining knight kind of a character, but I don't want to be just a dastardly evil guy.
So what I asked him is I asked him a moralistic question. I'm basing the story around him because he is my player and he is my group. So I'm basing the story around him. So I asked him this moralistic question, and that moralistic question is where the campaign is going. So there's like some really, really bad evil going on, and then there's some really, really obvious good. And since he picked the middle, he is going in that. If he had said, well, I'm a really, really good character, well, then maybe I would have picked, like, a really, really evil campaign. I would have really said that there's a lot of evil going on. But since he picked the middle, I'm saying, well, there's a lot of options in front of you. That kind of, like, inspired me a bit.
Let me see if I can pick some kind of cogency out of this.
Are you saying I'm not cogent? Are you saying I'm drunk?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying, in fact. What it sounds like to me.
Yes.
Is that I think I took the wrong mental approach to improv gaming. Because to me, if I'm writing notes, I slowly collect information, I go home, I process it, I come up with the outline of a game, I come back and I run the game.
There's no information.
Well, right.
Yeah.
But actually, I'd say there is. Because it sounds like you gather that information by coaxing it through a series of questions. Instead of using planning, you start by saying, give me a genre.
Got to pull the trigger.
Tell me about your character.
That's my genre. It's also my character.
Tell me about the boundaries and interests of your character.
Right.
That effectively, what you're doing is you, instead of trying to say, oh my gosh, I have nothing, must magically inspire myself to have a plot.
No.
You instead are getting them to slowly coax you into inspiration.
Mm-hmm.
To where by the time we're over, it's like, okay, I know it's Western, it's Weird West, he's playing a poor character, maybe I get him to define a struggle or two, and all of a sudden, now maybe inspiration strikes, or not even inspiration, but it's almost like he's given me the starting point.
Yeah.
Well, and
he's created the central character conflict for me.
Right, and I think that the character, like you say, is going to help with that, because for me, my initial motivation in this was when Chad started describing the setting and everything that I came up on a town, my initial thought was, I'm poor as dirt. What am I going to do? I'm going to go look for work because you know what? That's a very easy motivation.
Yeah.
It's like now if I was a rich guy, it would have been totally different. I probably would have walked in and just, something else. But I'm poor. I need a job because I need to make money. So that was kind of easy.
So my thing is that he is a good person who is poor. And so my thing was, what I want to present him with choices. And I want to present him with choices that are morally ambiguous and yet tempt him with money. And so what I can do is I can get him to go on something like a job or something that is going to really test his morals, because here's the key. It's not what would be best for his character, what would be best for the story. I'm going to tell you a secret here. It's I want to see what Pat is willing to do. I want to tempt Pat to do the wrong thing. And so what I did is I presented him with a moral choice, and the moral choice kept getting deeper and deeper had to choose a side, and I want to see how far I can take him. And how far I can take him, the whole point is to spin that into a story so he doesn't think it's Chad seeing how far Pat would go. It's the story and him playing through the story.
I'm actually starting to see a bit of three-card Monty here.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Where the approach I was thinking was I must come up with a plot.
Mm-mm.
The approach you're taking is create the character, ask them to give you some sort of a character conflict, and that becomes the story.
Oh, yes,
you just
absolutely.
Find ways of...
And who gives a crap if it's with a laser rifle or a Remington?
You just find a way of antagonizing that character story. So actually, you're not coming up with the game. You made them come up with the game.
Well, I think it's a little bit of both. And something that I was thinking about when you were talking earlier is, I think, Dan, you're sort of getting hung up because you're talking about, I need to go off and develop a plot. But what you need to remember here for an improv game like this, personally, I think it's a one-shot kind of a thing. You're going to sit down and you've got a couple hours to kill. You're going to play a game right now. This is not like the beginning of a campaign.
Right.
You're going to play this character for 2 hours and that's it, or whatever, for one session and it's over. So it's not, you know, you don't need to have a whole lot of planning. It's just so off the cuff.
Well, I have a question. Do you at least come up with any type of antagonist in it all, or are you just like, go with it? Because I know that if I do, not improv in the same way, but if I don't come up with a story for the day or the gaming week or whatever, I at least have like a common person that's going to be an antagonist or some sort of goal. Is that something you make up right away?
Expanding on her question, my question is very similar. How far ahead of the player are you on this? Do you have the idea for
30 seconds.
The whole plot? Are you 10 minutes ahead or are you 30 seconds ahead? Because one thing for me when I'm jamming completely off the cuff like that, I'm trying to figure out the next scene in my head before the players get to it. No. I'm trying to figure out what the NPCs are going to say when the players ask it. Basically, I'm trying to lay the train's tracks ahead of the train, and the players are the train.
Actually, what I did before that, and I hate to reveal this to Pat because he's sitting right here, is
he's gonna cry, it's fine,
or drop trow.
I'm gonna take a wild guess. You thought of a movie that fit this story?
Oh, we are on a Clint Eastwood movie. This is a very specific one.
Pale Rider,
it better not be the one he sings.
I'm not a big fan of Pale Rider.
So well, Chad, that I was able to predict that.
All I heard earlier was that there was some kind of a Mexican labor leader. And I just heard Red Dead Redemption.
No, it's not Red Dead Redemption.
I was thinking Red Dead Redemption.
It's a very specific.
Mr. Marsden.
No, I'll let the listeners try and figure out what Clint Eastwood movie I was basing this on.
It's not Paint Your Wagon.
No, it's not Paint Your Wagon. It's not Red Dead Redemption, which is not a Clint Eastwood movie. And it's
that
not,
is neither Clint Eastwood nor a movie.
It's not Pale Rider.
What is the deal with Red Dead Redemption?
I'm not a fan of
it. It's not red, and it's not dead.
So the original question here.
He's going Unforgiven. No, not really.
No, it's not Unforgiven.
Right, go on.
So the original question here is actually, how far in advance do I think? It's not far at all. What I did was, before he even told his character, what he said is, I want a semi-spiritual game. I don't want to be Deadlands where everybody's flinging fireballs and whatever just for fun and nickels in the county square, but I want there to be a certain spiritual aspect of it. You know, he was a man who didn't have a horse, but he had a saddle, and he was very poor, and there wasn't a job opportunity, and the job opportunity was a little shaky, and this was a little test of his morality and how far he could go, and that kind of created a plot between us. And so I threw out there that he needed a horse. And so I threw out a plot point that there was a farm that was attacked, and there may be a horse out there, there may not be a horse out there, the people are dead. And, you know, if there's a horse out there, it's owned by the people, but the people are dead. And, you know, that's like a sort of sad quandary, okay, but I'm desperate and I can kind of justify this in my desperation, and really cool, interesting scene that he went out there with. And it's the middle of the night. I really wanted to make this in the middle of the night and full moon. And I kind of got the idea of, you know, there's this wolf, and as he was walking into town, I made this plateau, and it's like...
But where's all this coming from?
No, well, and that's just it. I'm just kind of pulling out of my ass. Right. And in the moment, I'm
so
thinking
you're literally just making.
No, I went to Arizona. Like, okay. I've been to Arizona.
Right, right, right.
And I've seen the plateaus, and I'm like, wow, wouldn't it be cool if you're just a Western? And there's, like, this tourist center, and there's this road. And I was standing in the tourist center in a f***ing parking lot, and I couldn't go beyond this fence because it's all got to be preserved because it's this natural park. And then I was thinking, what was it like 100 f***ing years ago? There's no park. There was no fence. Just you walking.
Okay.
And so, and I imagine this wolf, and he's on the plateau, and how'd he get up there, and he didn't. And it's this vision that his character had, and then he walks on, and then he's trying to get this horse, right? And so he goes to this ranch, and the ranch is all burnt out because this character betrayed the Indians, and the Indians came in, and they swept in, and they killed him, and, you know, maybe there's this horse running around, and there's this horse fighting a wolf, and they're kind of rearing up, and I describe it, and that's where I'm like, okay, he said he wanted a spiritual aspect to this. And he has to choose, and that's a theme, right? Does he choose this horse, which is very practical, and will get him what he wants, or does he chase the horse off, and does he choose the wolf? And because the wolf, he had a vision of it, the wolf is sort of the spirit animal for him. And he chose the horse. Of course he chose the horse. He's okay. From the East and stuff. And what I want to do is I want to present him with conflicts and choices, and those conflicts and choices make the game and are an internal consistency and are a theme
through
the game.
So you start off basically by getting Pat to set sort of the parameters of the game. You get him to create by telling you what he wants, the natures of the conflicts of the game. And then in terms of inspiration for where to go from there, it sounds like you're really doing two things. One, you're just kind of making situations up to see what he will do with them.
Secondly, I want to really see what he does with them.
But secondly, you are drawing those from inspirations based on things you've seen.
A movie, a thing I've seen in real life,
so
in my travels.
I'm running running a game for Wayne, and Wayne says he wants a space opera game. He wants to play a Spec Ops soldier.
Sure.
So all of a sudden,
I sincerely doubt that, but go.
Right. But so all of a sudden, I like, well, what is your central character conflict?
Wayne, what's your central character concept?
What is your central conflict? Tell me.
Not conflict. Tell me about your character.
Okay, very briefly.
You said space opera, you said special operations. Okay. So we're talking spaceships, special operations. How does this work?
He is a character with a bad past that is running from his past. The military was his chance to create a new life for himself.
Okay.
And he's trying to forget about his past. He's running from it, hiding from it.
I'm already seeing
him.
Yeah.
I can do something like put you on a colony world. I'm taking this from that.
No. Back up. He said space opera, spaceships. Not colony world.
Okay.
He says he wants spaceships.
There could be spaceships.
Sure. Cowboy Bebop.
But here's my point, though.
Oh, God.
The concept, whether it's on a colony world or
something. I tried to run a Cowboy Bebop type campaign, and
they
rebelled against me.
Whether it's a colony world or a generation ship or a military ship, thing that comes to my mind is the Kurt Russell movie Soldier, where he's trying to get away from where he was, but the military wants something he has. And so maybe he's got to kind of choose between being rehabilitated back into society or doing what's right by the people that he's now been thrust amongst. So
Dude, you got a lot of concepts there.
Yeah.
You've got a lot of conflicts.
Right. That's it.
Okay. And what you're doing
I'm starting to get this.
Well, so the thing is, here's the issue. You want to present this to Wayne and yet not reveal that you've stolen it from Soldier.
Right. Well, you can do with
that doesn't matter, though. Whatever your inspiration is, that's fine. It doesn't matter. I mean, you as the GM have to have some jumping off point. You've got to start the story. But something that we've talked about a lot in the past is this concept of collaborative storytelling, that is what gaming is. I think this is the purest example of that concept.
Right.
Because you are sitting down at an improv game, off the cuff. You have got however many players you've got. That is, in essence, a collaborative story because you're going to set it rolling. But you're
right.
I am going to be doing this too because another thing about this is that my character was very, very minimally defined.
So
I didn't even know if I was going to be a gunslinger. Mm-hmm. Was I going to be a huckster kind of a character?
You tell me.
I have no idea.
You tell me.
You know what?
It's not my character.
I was developing it as I was going along.
Yeah. It's not my character.
We start rolling. I still don't know.
All right. I don't want to. So here's the thing. Let me ask the GMs this. Whether you're an improv GM or notes GM, doesn't matter. I don't care. Wayne has his spec op character, and you're trying to like create this framework and this internal consistency in his mind. And he starts telling you stuff like, I want to be in powered armor. I want to be in really, really powerful powered armor. And I want to be a really, really high rank. And I want to have a really, really powerful gun. And I really, really want to have all these robots under my command to be really powerful. What do you say to that?
Yes.
I say, okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think...
No.
Okay.
You don't say yes. You say yes, but.
But now that you have a phalanx of powered armor marines under control, you're surrounded by a billion bugs.
You've just created a story, John.
Of course I have.
You have just created a story by saying yes, but. You have just created to say Wayne gets what he wants, and you get what you want, and you've created a story, and you've created conflict. And you've created a way for Wayne to deal with the conflict and thus creating a plot.
I'd have taken a slightly different route. Because they were trying to get rid of you, you had a high rank, these things were under your command.
Plot. But right there.
They don't quite work.
Yes, but, and you just create a plot.
And in my case,
Has to do something to remedy that.
In my case, it would be yes, but now you have a maintenance crew. One of the maintenance crew actually grew up with you. He knows your past, and he doesn't respect you.
Well, or maybe NPCs.
The colonists are capable of rehabilitating these robots.
Oh, my God, I'm a notes-heavy GM. I can't handle all this improv. We just made a whole campaign.
This is wonderful. I've never had anyone sit down and explain to me how the magic works.
Yeah,
I agree. I never have either.
Yeah, and so, John, I want to pass this
over
to you.
Let me ask you this. Hold on.
All right.
Let me ask you this. We're running a game. It's happening right now. What do you want to play? Quick.
High fantasy.
Boom. High fantasy. We're talking unicorns above, rainbows, everything, wizards, towers, all that.
Yes.
What kind of character do you want to play?
I want to play a powerful warlock.
You are a powerful warlock. You command the dead. Perfect. You command demons. How do you live? Because your warlock society is outlawed. You live in this high fantasy realm where magic abounds and it's all goodness and hope and light, yet you are the darkness. Tell me, how do you live? How do you survive in this realm where you are outlawed?
Trying to take it back over?
You are trying to take it back over. Beyond your just undead minions that you command, do you have any help or are you just alone by yourself?
Alone.
I really like that.
Alone with the demons and the dead.
Yes.
Right. I still have friends.
Dan. Take this over.
Okay. So you're alone with the demons and the dead. How do you control them? Is it a pact? Is it a bargain?
Careful not to get too mired in the technical aspect.
Okay, fair enough. Let me just back the question up then. How is it you control them?
I'd say a pact.
Okay.
Definitely. Awesome.
So you have a pact of some kind.
Now spin it out into the greater world.
Okay.
How does this affect the plot?
So
the framework. You're trying to get the framework.
The place you're living right now, do the people know what you are? Are you even living in a place? Are you hiding in a cave? Are you living in a town? And if you're living in a town, do the people know what you are?
I'm living in a town. They don't know what I am.
John, you're the game master. Ask your questions. Expand this world. Establish your framework.
Are your intentions as evil as everyone assumes they are?
Yes.
Why?
Because I hate the High Priestess.
Pat, go in character. Start establishing plot. Go with the game.
Go in character?
Go. Just go.
Start running that game.
So you hate this the High Priestess. Is there a rivalry somehow?
Yes, she's my sister.
Oh, damn. Oh, wow. Damn! Oh, my man. God, I want to play in this game.
I'm good at creating characters.
Keep going. Yeah. Keep going.
Let me bring Gnarl back and I'm in.
Yeah!
Is this your older sister?
Younger.
Mm. Okay.
Wayne.
You usurped me.
Wayne, go.
You're trying to take over the world. Who's actually ruling the world right now that you're trying to take it back from?
All the good. There's absolutely no evil involved whatsoever.
So you are the sole bastion of evil. The rest of the evil has been rid from the world, and you're holding the line?
Yes.
Okay. You are standing there. You have your minions, hundreds of thousands. You started with one graveyard and one church, and you raised them. You commanded them. And as the villagers came at you to destroy you with their torches and pitchforks, you destroyed them as well. And then you raised them. And then as the county came up against you with their torches and pitchforks and militia, you destroyed them. And you raised them. And they were yours as well. And you kept doing this county to county, and you kept raising them and raising them. until you got too big to ignore. The Inquisition came after you, and you stopped them. You crushed them, and then you raised them. They were yours. And now, on the eve of the final battle, you stand there, all your constructs, all the dead, all of them, under your command. Your sister there, and you're crushed. Your army's overrun. You have no defenses. The last minion destroyed. You escape. You hide in the woods. They are searching for you. What do?
Hit them where it hurts. Get the little people.
How? You're standing there in the woods. It's nighttime. The bugs are zipping around you. It's forest. It's dark. You hear the soldiers crawling through you. There's an undead here, an undead there. They're sacrificing themselves. You try to raise the fallen soldiers, but the powers of good were just too much for you. But you still live. See, what do? Is the most powerful question you can ask in improv gaming. Because you're not going to say no. You're not going to stop them. You are giving them complete command of what is going on.
I am still jealous of the way that you can take what we went through around here. I think I could have come up with a starting scene.
Sure.
But I would have needed
anybody
to have,
can.
I yeah. would have needed to have stepped away, put my thoughts together for at least 5 minutes or so.
Oh my God. But
and then come back. You were able to sit there while we went around the table and start off the scene. I don't think I could have done that.
I actually had one as well. It's a little bit different.
Yeah.
You're hiding in a town because of the fact that you're hiding and have been on the run. You only have one minion left. The Inquisition's coming because there have been rumors of dark things occurring in this town.
I'm not saying you're wrong.
Right.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right to go with that. But to raise her up to her absolute pinnacle of power and then to cut that all out and to swipe that all away and to leave her at her lowest and then start the adventure there.
Well, and as you described it, you didn't go at all where I thought you were going to go. I would have had the sister standing out there in front of her army.
Waiting for her to come out
and talk.
Because there's no wrong answer. There's no wrong answer in what Wayne is suggesting. There's no wrong answer in what Dan suggested. All these are perfectly valid.
Wayne wanted the character conflict.
Yeah.
Chad wanted the reconstruction.
Yeah.
I wanted the underdog story.
Yeah, exactly.
There's no right or wrong to that.
Yeah. And the right is
what the hell did the player want?
Exactly. The player wants a good game. And the player wants their character to be involved. And the key is if you're an improv game master, look at your character and to look at the other people's characters, because obviously chances are you're not running a lone wolf. You're running like all of these other people. John is the inquisitor who is in love with the necromancer, and Dan is the blacksmith who's providing arms, but the evil of the church has killed his wife and he doesn't want to throw in with the necromancer, but he sees her army's crushed and he feels he can change her to good, but yet a force of change, and you know, all these other different characters.
I am the zombie that somehow has a soul.
No, you're not.
No, you're not.
Yes, I am.
You're ginger. You're not. No soul.
I am the zombie that has a mind.
A mind. You're a husk who has a mind. Okay.
I'm not a mindless husk. I'm a
mindful
husk.
You're an emancipated golem.
So to tie all this in together and define sort of this gestalt, what you want to do as a GM is kind of put them in a direction. You know, you have all this, you have this framework, Wayne's idea, Dan's idea, my idea, and all the people's listening who have all these different ideas, everybody who's listening to this, who listen to the round, it's like Dan's idea, John's idea, idea, going around and saying, okay, I could do something with this. This is like really cool. There's a lot of really cool concepts. Let's gel it together. It's not your concept. As a game master, it doesn't belong to you. It's a collaborative thing. You have taken ideas from everybody around the table. You have taken ideas from movies, from books, from your own experiences, and you're working together. They are giving you ideas. They are giving you directions you want to go. They are giving you the sort of... John, you have not even opened that beer yet.
I'm drinking this beer.
Right. Oh, I'm sorry. And you know, you figure out that direction you want to go, and you go together as a group. And it's trusting the game master not to screw you over. It's a game master trusting the players to provide useful input of just not, I win, to make a good story, to make good characters. And we all go in that direction together.
You know, Chad, but I think it would be a fun exercise is...
What we just did, because I would totally play in that game.
An extension of what we just did. Now that we've set this up, I would love to see what the listeners come up with as their starting scene.
Yeah.
On the forums, in the review thread, when this episode drops, I would love to see anyone listening go out there and say, if you had been given all these threads, how would you start the game?
Whether it was for the fantasy game or sci-fi game. John, we got a few minutes left here, so I kind of want to toss this over to you as the other improv GM. How does your style, your approach differ from Chad's, or is it completely in line with what he does? Do you have another way of doing it?
I hate that title. It's like, I'm a Chad-style GM.
Well,
and, I don't think we've quite encapsulated everything.
Well, you know, it's just like...
Yeah, all right, well, call it what you want. But my point is, if I was to sit down and say, John, run an improv game, taking the labels away, what would your approach be like? Would it line up a lot like what Chad's done?
Quite a lot, not all necessarily.
Okay, what are some of the nuances or differences that you would take?
I would want a group template before we proceeded. From there, I would probably design the major antagonists. And if it was Julie the Necrolord's campaign, it would may be the church or the paladinry or whatever.
I really like that character, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, that would be a fun
that's
campaign.
Really cool, Jew.
Would system be different as well? Because I know Chad is a...
Yes, absolutely. Chad would run Pathfinder straight out of the book. Yep. Chad would run Roll High.
Yeah, because I know you are the type of GM where you like the system, you like the crunch behind it.
Yep.
Chad is the type of GM where he would prefer to come up with the whatever
system
the rules
gets
are
in
be.
The way of story.
Yeah. Exactly.
Story is secondary.
So he wants the simplest
system is secondary.
He wants the simplest rules that will help him get to the good story.
You know, I'm usually more of a crunch guy like John, but I think for this, for an improv game like this, I think Chad's way is a little bit better because I think the system you want to keep it light because again, it's a collaborative story.
Yeah.
You're running it straight
on a lark for 1 hour. Okay, yeah. Don't bother rolling a fully generated Pathfinder character for a few hours game session on a day.
Perfectly honest, as an improv GM, it really doesn't matter what system you use.
Yeah,
and I'm not saying
I'm not saying
you should throw a system out and you shouldn't use any system and it's just whoever holds a story stick. Whatever system you're comfortable with and whatever system your players like, that's fine. Get the story down, get the characters down, get a little bit of basic role play down, and then maybe make the characters. Whatever works for your group, it doesn't really matter.
Let's not get too bogged down here in system talk, because that's...
Oh my god, system sucks, all combat is wanking.
I think it makes a slight difference, though, because if John is trying to put this game together and he is using an established system, that means if you're having conflict, he's coming up with those NPCs that you're fighting on the fly, too.
Yes.
That's not a concern
Chad
has in
his approach.
And I'm
coming up with the framework, the mathematical framework by which we resolve opposed actions and random chance.
That's why I wanted to hit system, because there's more math work that John has to do than Chad.
And I understand, because, for example, the one time I was asked to run an improv game, they specifically requested a Shadowrun game.
Yeah.
I could have just used the archetypes in the books as the enemy. But anyways, John, go on. How do you differ from Chad's style?
We both really enjoy each other's games.
We do. I don't think there's very much difference. No, I think I probably am a little more concerned with the setting. I like to weave ways that player characters can improve their setting. My philosophy is always that they give much more of a crap about improving their spaceship or their dungeon than they do about getting another sword.
Whereas my philosophy is the story is its own reward. And neither philosophy is correct. Neither philosophy is wrong.
Okay.
And I believe the story is own reward as well.
Yeah.
However, I think I am more willing to, even on the fly, indulge in some mechanics by which I can dole out rewards and punishments, mostly rewards. Let's face it, the more rules we have, the more cool it is to have a mithril shirt or a +1 sword. And that's a way to bump someone along, even for story purposes, not solely mechanical.
Now, one of the things you mentioned, though, is you said that you would design up front possibly some of the setting elements, whether we're talking about general setting itself or the story's antagonist or whatever. Where are you drawing your inspiration for that stuff?
I usually look at the player characters through a mirror darkly to drive the antagonists. If Julie Necrolord was the main PC, the main NPC would probably be awesome a paladin PC. Or a cleric of some sort of lawful good
deity. Her sister.
Deity. It could be her sister.
So basically just take what you hear and invert it.
Yes.
I think that's
not
true
always
enough.
Directly
yeah.
at a one-to-one basis, but...
That's good on a very instantaneous,
right.
oh, let's get drunk and
the,
throw
the
down
the villain
group,
should be, in some respect,
well, a little bit more
the hero
than
through
that.
A mirror dark.
Yeah.
And that's how I design a lot of my main antagonist NPCs.
Have you ever just done away with the setting by saying, okay, let's run an improv, say, Star Wars game? Because I know the Star Wars settings
I've run
you
lots
know
of
very
improv
well.
Star Wars games. Mm-hmm.
That way you only are dealing with the players and their individual portion of it.
Yep, and I can take that direction in any way I want to. I mean, a rebel could be fighting the Empire as the forces of Monotonous Order, or they could be fighting a band of crazed pirates in Z-95s as the representatives of pure chaos beyond that which even they're trying to sow.
Dan, let me ask you this. You're a notes-heavy guy.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely nothing wrong with that. Love your games. Love them. What's your biggest problem with improv games? What's your biggest stumbling
block? I think my biggest stumbling block has always been I had never been able, until this episode, and I'll say I learned a lot on this episode. This is one where I was not...
Good, I'm really drunk.
And... I don't know. Well, and I did have to do some reading between the lines to try and find the cogency in there. But the point is...
So did we all.
This is one where I was a student, not the teacher. But I think the biggest thing was, it's intimidating. The idea that I have to sit down with a group
a
of people...
A big, gigantic, 400-page book of algebra is intimidating to me.
Even forget that. Even if it was just... monostat roll high. It's just the idea that I have to go from zero to a fully functional game in a matter of minutes. I didn't know how to approach that problem. In a notes heavy thing, well, I collect tons of information. I get a group template. I know what they're playing. I go home. I watch a movie or TV show that inspires me, and I kind of contemplate on it.
Oh, my God, I watch a movie and it completely steal every aspect of it.
Well, but my point, though, being this is not something I'm doing on the spot. This is something I'm doing over several weeks. And I think what really threw me off on this whole thing was the idea of just going from zero to game in the course of a matter of minutes. And I just didn't know how to approach it. I didn't know how to start mining the ideas. And I think the wrong thing I was doing, at least for me, was I was trying to find that purely within myself, as opposed to allowing the players to be that source of inspiration.
Here's what I want you to do. The Western game that we had talked about, that I had run Lone Wolf with Pat, we had talked about, you know, like some of us recording this and some of us playing it and who's GMing it, who's not. I want you to run it. After this episode is over, we're recording it, and I want you to run it. I want you to run it as an improv, just off-the-cuff GM with only the knowledge that you have of the game. Well, do you think that you can do that?
I think I could. Now, we'll pursue with the groups down for, if not tonight, then certainly on some Sunday when Wayne's not feeling up to it or whatever, I can do it then. So, but very good. This has been, at least for me, a great episode.
One thing I want to add in here, though, is that each of these different kind of games have a different kind of feel. A lot of times when people talk about this topic, it becomes a camp of this type of game is better, this type of game is better. And that's something I want to really stress. I have played in both kinds of games, and there is something I get different out of each kind of game.
Absolutely.
So this isn't a matter of one style is better than the other. And I really want to stress that because, like I said, a lot of times it breaks down into this debate of which is the better style of GM.
I have to say that Dan is a very notes-heavy GM.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. You're crunchy. I'm not saying you're absolutely wargamey, but you're very crunchy. Crunchy to the point where you've written your own system and own rules, combat systems, and you ran a Skies of Glass game. I played a character. I really enjoyed the character, and I really enjoyed the game. Dan, I really, really, really want to revisit this game. Your games are awesome. And totally opposite of what I run. It's not about who's right and who's wrong.
No, I agree with you.
That's not even on the radar.
And from my perspective, out of a Dan game, what I hope for, the way he runs a game, is a lot of intrigue, a lot of... there's a long-term plot, and the pieces as we go through are fitting together like a puzzle. Out of a Chad game, what I'm hoping for is more of that character aspect of it. Not that there's not character aspect in Dan's game, not that there's not pieces putting together in Chad's game. It's just each one has a different focus. And it's a matter of what do you as the player feel like playing in at that moment.
So let me ask this, Julie. What do you want out of a game? Because obviously you've never played in a Dan game, to my knowledge.
No, she has not.
And you've never played in one of my games, to my knowledge. What do you want out of a game? What do you? I'm really forgetful. So
no, you're drunk.
Yeah, and that too.
I like character development. That's probably like my biggest thing. I don't like my character just to be rolling dice. I like a lot of character development. So I could probably do good in both games because I usually will make it happen if it isn't happening.
Absolutely.
Awesome.
I really respect that in a gamer too. Well, as a GM, thank you for making that happen.
I hope this episode has been useful to someone at least as much as it's been useful to me. If nothing else, hey, I benefited from Fear the Boot finally. So
it's only been what, 4 years? Yeah. 5 years?
Six years.
Six.
Holy
crap.
Bro. Anyway, thank you guys all for tuning in.
Hey, I want to mention one thing.
Okay.
That we haven't mentioned in a long, long time.
Okay.
We have a forum community. www.feartheboot.com/forum. Forums?
Yes. I think it's singular.
How can I describe it? We have this Big Ten philosophy, and people are all welcome. And we just had a person who asked us, like, how do I get into this forum? And the unanimous vote was to start posting. We don't exclude anybody. We are not assholes. We have our drama. And this sounds strange. Come visit us on the forums. It's a wonderful community. And we'd love to hear from you.
Tell us what you thought of this episode. Yeah. Tell us how you would have started these games.
Yeah.
Tell us what you think about cars and motorcycles and pie and video games and movies.
There are no mistakes. There are only happy accidents.
That's right. that's children.
That's true until you shart. So,
well, Bob Ross never sharted.
Never.
So,
we were ending on a high point, and then we had to go there.
Yes. Welcome.
So, can we get back to the happy ending, please?
So, welcome to Fear the Boot.
Thank you guys for tuning in, and we will catch you next time.
See awesome.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2012. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.